The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
After a month as idle as Ed Woodward's fax machine, we are back, and so is a brand new Premier League campaign, plump with promise, ripe with adventure, pregnant with possibilities. Today, we take you through the teams, examine the strengths and weaknesses, and draw the obvious conclusions. Aston Villa for the title. But what else? Who'll be the star signings? Will Gary Monk's Gilet be the league's only armless outfit? And which big teams will miss out on the top four? Our thoughts on all of that coming up in today's Football Weekly. Wow. An excitingly familiar feel to all of this. It's almost like we've never been away. James Horncastle, Jacob Steinberg and Ian McIntosh are on board as a new season hoves into view, Ian.
It certainly does. I'm positively effervescent.
Yeah, but you always are, aren't you?
Yeah, naturally. Yeah. Naturally good-natured.
Yeah. Jacob, are you fired up and pumped about this?
Yep, pretty much.
Good. James?
Stoked.
Are you really?
Not about Stoke, but yeah.
Well, you might be. I don't know, you might be. I know you are about Stoke, but it's not the time nor the place to discuss the Potters. That's very much in part two.
Absolutely.
Part one, I've got marked down as title race. Who should be in that? Which teams are we throwing into this lump?
In this conversation?
Yeah.
I think Chelsea.
Yeah.
Man City?
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal?
Right.
Okay.
Right. This could take a while. Make yourself a cup of tea. We'll
that's
be back.
That part
no, all right. So the favourite to be what? Chelsea and Man City. That seems to be the consensus.
Yeah, I think those two stand out above right. everyone else. Chelsea in particular have dramatically improved with the fact that they have a competent striker. Fabregas is an upgrade, not so much on Lampard the legend, but on Lampard the fading force that he was last season. All over the team, they're strong. They have Mourinho. They're tactically brilliant, as they showed against Liverpool towards the end of the season, and they've had their transitional year. So Chelsea are my pick, but Manchester City, on the other hand, have just filled up all the gaps in the squad. They're pretty much secure now, I would have thought.
Mm. Jacob, who would you pick out of those two?
You'd say Chelsea and City the favourites, but I think with Chelsea there.
But which of them? Chelsea, you think?
I think City will win the league.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
They've got the best squad, they've got the best strikers, and when Yaya Toure and Silva and company were playing well, I think, as we saw towards the end of the season, they're fairly unstoppable at times. And
I think they played together five times last season, didn't they? With Aguero, that sort of...
Yeah, and Aguero missed the second half of the season pretty much with Negredo, and they still won the league. So if those two can get fit... I know, actually, Negredo was walking through at Wembley on the weekend with a sort of robotic foot, you know, one of those weird things that people have now when they break their feet, you know, that kind of huge cast.
Yeah. So they can get him back, it'd be like the icing on the cake. Yeah. Assuming they have a cake, which, of course, at Man City is...
that's a big thing. But they've kept him, though, Toure. You know, he's still there, and he's probably still the best player in the league now that Suarez has gone. And they've filled up the little problem they had at the back, where I know Dennis kind of came good at the end of the season, but now they've bought Mangala, who, by all accounts, is a very good player.
James, Chelsea or Man City?
I think Chelsea, just because only United and Chelsea have retained the title in the Premier League era. It's a hard thing to do. And not to read too much into the Community Shield, because it is, you know.
Because Man United won it last season.
Yes, yeah. Precisely. City, you know, weren't so great in that. Picking up on that Yaya Toure point, how can they keep him happy? Will he just go through the motions this season? I think Chelsea have also got some, you know, perhaps some underlying issues to resolve in that. You know, who will Mourinho go with? Will he stick with Cech, or does he push Courtois in? So, yeah, there's going to be competition for places in that. But I just think...
Well, they will at City as well with, you know, Big Willie and Big Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this has been very much a trend across Europe all summer of getting, you know, two very good, competent goalkeepers, you know, Kaylin Navas and... Iker Casillas at Real, Pepe Reina and Neuer at Bayern, etc. But I think, yeah, Mourinho's teams usually are better in their second season. I think in all his second seasons at Porto, Chelsea, Inter and Real Madrid, he has at least won the league title. So, yeah, that he usually gets the team he wants in his second year. And this is very much a Mourinho team. Yeah, I think Costa, you couldn't find a more Mourinho-like striker than him. But, you know, will Chelsea play the kind of football that, you know, Abramovich wants, aspires to? It is a very Mourinho kind of hard-hitting, physical-looking team with some finesse in Hazard, Oscar and Fabregas, of course. But, you know, I mean, even Fabregas last season...
That's weird, though, isn't it, seeing him play for Chelsea?
Cesc, yes. It's like evil Cesc, I guess. You know, he seems to have shaved his
dark
head.
Cesc.
You know, we had that with Torres, you know, those kind of good Torres at Liverpool and then bad, evil Torres.
Or just bad Torres.
Yes.
I mean, clips floating around of Torres as well in pre-season doing some fairly awful things. It was a back-heeling the ball out of play for a throw, and last night was a terrible shot. Against whoever it was they were playing in pre-season. It doesn't matter, it's pre-season. Don't need to know who they were playing.
Yep.
But Costa scored twice in that game, so he's looking quite good for them. Mm. But they are still
playing Real Sociedad.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Mm. Costa had injuries last season with his hamstring, and they would be one injury away from having to play a 36-year-old Drogba or Torres.
He's their Andy Carroll, essentially. You know, if they lose him, you know, they do have Drogba, yes, but Drogba's got injured.
Hmm. They can still play Shirley up front if push comes to shove. He did all right a few times last season. And Costa does have a habit of just ignoring injuries and playing anyway, which is very admirable.
After 10 minutes in finals.
But you've got to salute his indefatigability.
Yeah.
It's a big point, though, isn't it? What about... Oh, sorry, Jake.
Some of those guys behind the striker are sometimes a little bit flaky as well. You know, even Hazard is an amazing player, but can be quite inconsistent at times. And Oscar's been poor for about 6 months now. He didn't have a good World Cup. You know, Willian doesn't maybe score enough at times. He's, you know, hard worker and tactically quite good, but is there enough of contribution? So that's just why I think City, they have so many decisive players, so many ways to hurt you. And sometimes for Chelsea, that's not always there.
Is there another challenger out there? Ion, for example, asking, are Arsenal title contenders, or is this another false dawn I think he's referring to what's been a fine pre-season for the Gunners.
Yeah, they've got that winning feeling back.
We briefly touched on the Community Shield and their 3-0 victory against Man City.
I think their signings have been good. They've made sort of statement intent in signing Sanchez. Sort of typical Wenger in sort of looking to change a winger into a striker, as he did with Henri, tried and failed to do with Jovinho. But I think, yeah, Sanchez is someone who scored a lot of goals for Barca last season. And yeah, I think he's best when he's playing off a front man, say like he did at Udinese with Totò Di Natale. So if he can, you know, sort of break beyond Giroud, Ozil can play him. I think one of the things that derailed Arsenal last season was, you know, when they lost Walcott, they didn't really have someone who could stretch to play. Sanchez will do that. And also they lost Ramsey for a significant period of that period and that part of the season. So, yeah, he was excellent in the Community Shield. If they can keep him healthy as well, I think they can go far.
How far, James? How far do you think, Ian?
Well, I think, as always with Arsenal, they have the potential to win the title. There's certainly no problem with the talent that's in their ranks. It's just whether or not they can keep doing it through February, March, when they're picking up injuries, where they're getting tired, and where perhaps they have a mental problem.
Well, it's interesting that not only have they made signings on the field, but they've also addressed, or they've attempted to address some of the causes, I guess, of those injuries.
A very good story in these very pages by Amy Lawrence on the new fitness trainer coming in to address that sort of thing. So, they are obviously aware of these problems, and there are lots of signs.
Which is nice. It's only been six or seven years that it's been going on.
But there are lots of reasons to be cheerful. We've already spoken about Alexis, but also the performances of Jack Wilshere and in particular Aaron Ramsey on Sunday were really encouraging. Ramsey looks like he's making up for lost time after that injury. And again, if you can keep everyone fit. But there are also reasons for doubt, particularly in the centre of defence, where, of course, you have Per Mertesacker and Laurent Koscielny, who were one of the better partnerships in the Premier League. You have Callum Chambers, who looks a very encouraging stand-in, but I'm not convinced that's enough right now. And the fact that Monreal has been playing at centre-back during pre-season sort of tells its own story, and it's very, very difficult to find a backup centre-back
Sanogo play there?
Sanogo's been very interesting over pre-season. I was there at the Emirates Cup when he did terrible things to Benfica. No one really knew what was going on at all. It was most discombobulating.
Was it 5-1?
It was.
There've been some big wins for us, haven't there? But as you say, it's further along in the season when the wheels tend to come, or have in recent years, come off.
And they have to improve against the other members of the top four, the other elite clubs in this.
Right.
Because they took some big shellackings to them last year. Maybe that Community Shield win against Man City is the dawn of a change of that. But
two games, two trophies for Arsenal.
Interesting on Sunday as well. They were playing Arteta really as the only shielding midfielder, and he said he's going to be the captain this season, Arteta, which is kind of strange. And you kind of wonder, in those big games away to Chelsea and Liverpool, is he going to be able to stop the wave of attack that's going to come towards them and led them to being 3 or 4 nil down after about 20 minutes? And you still think Ramsey and Wilshere could be, Ramsey can dominate midfield. He looks like he's bulked up hugely over the summer as well, having seen him on Sunday and last week in training. But you just worry when they go up against those big teams away from home that there's not a defensive shield there. And if it's Arteta on his own, it's not quite convincing.
All right. Well, when we come to record this for real, who else should we include in the kind of title contenders, top teams group? Would you have Liverpool in there? Would you have 7th place Man United?
I would have Liverpool and Manchester United in a group of 5 chasing for the top 4 spots. But that's probably about it. I think of all the 5, Liverpool are the team that you really can't say has got better over the summer. And that's not entirely their fault. Suarez is irreplaceable. The fact that Barcelona will spend so much money on a man who's so much trouble illustrates just how special he is on the pitch. Even with that much money, there's nothing Liverpool could do to replace him. So it's hard to see how they're actually going to improve, even by quite sensibly spreading their money across a range of options. I think they're a better squad now. They're certainly more suited for a fight on 2 fronts. They certainly weren't suited for that last season. But I find it very difficult to see them competing for it.
Big players in the past, and come back, and other players have grown. You look at, say, Man United lost Van Nistelrooy in 2006 and won the league the year after because other players stepped up, and Arsenal lost Omri and almost won the league the year after because Van Persie and Adebayor started playing well. And they made big additions in defence as well, which was the huge problem last season. And, Lovren is a good signing. Moreno looks like a cracking signing as well, the left back from Sevilla. And then as well, Manquillo seems to be quite encouraging as well. Glenn Johnson was a huge problem last season at right back.
Absolutely, but we are in a time where there are 2 exceptionally well-funded and well-managed teams in Chelsea and Manchester City, plus Arsenal and Manchester United. The competition's so strong up there that I'm just not sure if Liverpool can go one better this year.
Speaking of up there, some people, his Irish Reading career, for example, tweeting, who the bloody hell are Liverpool going to sign up top? Obviously a feeling that they still haven't got enough firepower up there with Suarez's departure.
No, well, Sturridge did score a lot of goals last season, but he can again be a little bit inconsistent. And Lambert's got potential to get 10 or 15 goals for them, I think.
What about the signing of Lallana, his fellow?
I really like Lallana.
You do? Yeah. Do you like him in Liverpool? Is that the player they needed to spend that much money on?
Maybe not. I mean, but when you look at those games towards the end of the season, they didn't have anyone on the bench to come on. They had they were turning to Victor Moses and Aspas and Alberto. So they couldn't change games when they were in trouble, particularly against Chelsea, the game they needed to win, the game that lost them the title. So now they have options, and they've got four or five options to play across the across that line behind Sturridge. So in that regard, they are better. And also Emre Can is, again, very impressive in pre-season. Another good signing for them. So, I think Liverpool are contenders. The problem for them,
contenders,
I think,
will be, for the title or contenders for top 4? Yeah,
definitely for top 4.
Right.
And depends. And Rodgers, he does make players better. It's not just about Suarez. He's made Sterling better. He's made Coutinho better. And he's Sturridge as well.
I think Jacob's absolutely right on the effect that Rodgers has on players. And the signings that he's made this summer might not win the title this year, but next year you could see that squad growing up together and getting better and better and getting more used to the style of football that he plays. Maybe next year, serious title contenders, but this year maybe just a readjustment.
Well, we've got 5 big names then and only 4 top 4 spots, as its very name suggests. Which do you think of those five is going to miss out? Is it Man United, James?
Well, I think a lot of people are talking United up in the sense that, well, there's the hype around Van Gaal. I mean, the World Cup could have been a disaster for him. Many anticipated it would and how that might impact on him going into this job. Instead, yeah, it's kind of sprinkled stardust on him. Yeah, everyone seemed to got high on Van Gaal over that summer period. Yeah, he seems to have convinced in pre-season. I mean, they've won all of their games. Yeah, he has that charisma that Moyes didn't have.
That swagger.
Mm. That ability to drop your pants and show a golden willy, as Arjen Robben said he had. I think it means you're lucky in Dutch.
Right.
But
see a doctor.
Yes. I do think he has also pointed out some clear concerns, which is, yeah, this squad is kind of a bit broken and unbalanced.
Mm.
Yeah, they've lost quite a few leaders in that dressing
room. Yeah,
who've
they actually signed so far?
Shaw and Herrera.
Right. Is that enough?
No.
For a team that plummeted down the like Van Gaal's trousers in an angry post-game talk. but, I mean, can they do a Liverpool? Can they bounce back straight back up again?
There's still a fair chunk of the transfer window to go. Mm-hmm. And if they can bring in, I would say, a top-class centre-back and a very dynamic midfielder, then I'll back them to finish above Liverpool and finish fourth. But right now, they're going to play a back three. They've only got three senior centre-backs in Smalling, Jones and Evans. Tyler Blackett, by all accounts, has been very good in pre-season, but it's still not enough in that department. Finally, in Herrera, midfield, who can get around the pitch, you get one more of them in, and I think Man United will be a much more secure proposition.
Darren Fletcher's been good in pre-season. He has, hasn't he? He's been a sort of a new find.
Pick a team to miss out on the top four.
Rooney as well. It's been good.
Yeah, and he's now the captain, etc. and so on. Pick a team to miss out on the top four, Jacob.
It's impossible, really.
Well, isn't really not. Are Liverpool going to miss out?
I'm going to say
Chelsea and Man City.
I think Liverpool.
There,
one problem for Liverpool is the fact that how they'll cope with the Champions League,
right?
And United, supposedly
won't have the Champions League
or any,
or even bigger, they won't have the Europa League,
right?
Yeah. Last season, Liverpool played 43 games compared to I think 56, 57 of Chelsea, Man City, and Arsenal. It wasn't just the fact that they were fitter, it's the fact that Rodgers had more time to prepare those players for their opponents at the weekend. And you can see they shifted from formation so well last season, and they won't have that advantage now.
Are those numbers that you remember from last season, or have you been researching that recently?
It was for an article at the end of last season.
Okay, right.
Still stuck in there.
All right.
But as it stands, I think that Manchester United need two more signings or they're going to come fifth. If they get those signings, I think they'll pip Liverpool to it.
All right. James, did you come out on this one, the top four?
Did I come out?
Yeah, I mean, did you have a verdict?
I think Liverpool.
Liverpool?
Just because I think the Champions League and losing Suarez will drain them.
Right.
Everton as well. I don't, not challenges for the title, but...
Top four?
Not necessarily top four, but they're going to challenge. They're going to be better as well.
For what?
For top four, definitely.
Oh, they
I don't think they're
okay.
I'm not saying they are going to knock one of the teams out of the top four.
But if they're going to challenge for the top four, they might, but they could,
you know, Besic is...
Let's talk about Everton in a second, in a section I like to call not quite the top, but not far off it. Ian, by the way, I noticed you're not carrying a black folder today.
There's no stats yet, so it's lying dormant at the moment on my desk. All the sheets are printed out, the biros are prepped and ready.
You must be very excited about that.
I'm actually twitching.
Is that the best bit of the season for you?
Yeah, you know, you get that beautiful serenity of clean white paper just waiting for all those little ticks and dashes.
Right.
So the whole campaign plays out.
What's the best bit of the season for you, Jacob?
FA Cup third round.
Is it?
I really like that, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. James?
Chelsea lunches.
that's a good answer. That's a very good answer. Right. For me, it's whenever I can be here talking with you guys and you listeners. That's it for part one. We'll be back with more after this exciting bit of music or advert, depending on what's happening.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog.
Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com and to support this podcast, use the offer code GUARDIAN to take 10% off.
Attention Football Weekly fans in the Northwest or further afield if you fancy it, I don't know.
Scotland? Scotland?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. After our sellout show in Dublin last season, it was a sellout actually, there was a big queue for that, we're loading up the tour bus one more time, turning the volume up to 11, says producer Ben, and heading to Mancunia to open the inaugural Manchester Football Writing Festival with a special live show on Thursday, September the 4th. This is going to happen at the Royal Northern College of Music, apparently. Tickets at a mere £12, and it all kicks off at 7. Football Weekly live in Manchester, featuring, drum roll, Ian, you're in.
Hi.
Yeah, James, you're there as well. Jacob, you've not got the shout. Maybe you're busy that night.
He's probably doing proper journalism.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, we've got Barry Glendenning in instead, who today is covering women's rugby in Paris. I'm not sure if that's for work or pleasure. Anyway, there's a link to that on the Guardian website. September the 4th, that's the main thing, and 12 of your hard-earned pounds. But act soon, because those tickets won't be hanging around for long. I'll warrant.
Have a bang on that.
Have very much a bang on that. Now, we were talking about all those teams that were... Well, for example, Everton and Spurs, both of whom finished above Man United last season.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jacob, sorry, you were doing that thing about Everton being potentially a wild card in that top four battle.
Yeah, well, they bought Besic, who was, you know, he looked good at the World Cup, and they, for once, Everton have done something that they don't do usually, and they've really gone out and spent on a striker, and obviously they know what Lukaku could do from last season. I don't think that he was necessarily good enough for Chelsea, and I'm not sure that Mourinho is particularly taken by some of his comments last season when he was on loan at Everton, but he will score goals, and they've spent, what is it, £28 million on him, if you consider that, you know, United have spent £27 million on Luke Shaw. Then people have said that there's not a lot of value in the Lukaku deal, but maybe from that perspective there is. And they finished fifth last season. They were close to it. They were close to finishing in the top four. They showed much more positivity against the big sides, and Martinez is a team who really gets his manager who really gets his teams playing attractive football and interesting football.
It'd be interesting to see how he uses and how much he uses Ross Barkley as well, who was a year older.
He used him a lot. And also, we don't know, they always seem to get a loan signing as well, Everton. So we're not, you know, they haven't got De La Feo this season, but there might be someone else come in. The thing for them will be, can they cope with the Europa League?
Right. Yeah.
Is that loan signing Christian Atsu?
Again,
Chelsea. Yeah.
Someone super, super nippy.
Why is that that Everton always get the loan deals? Because they're nice or because they're not threatening?
He's
or?
A good developer of talent, I guess, is Martinez. So I can see that being a plus point whenever he asks for another club's player.
Yeah. And they got Barry again as well.
Well, they haven't, they? Yeah.
And who was a good signing for them last season.
Mm.
But the most profound change at Everton is the fact that they're not losing players. They've got Barkley down to a long-term contract. They've got Stones down to a long contract. And obviously Lukaku and Barry. You usually have a thing when a club knocks on the door of the Champions League that everyone comes in and pilfers their players. But they haven't done that. They haven't been able to do that. And there's a mood around Everton that they are getting better steadily, which is not something they've had. Even under Moyes, so it was still, if someone performed really well, you'd expect them to be snatched away.
It'd be funny if he turned out to be the very thing that was holding them back all the time.
It wouldn't surprise me for a moment. I mean, the main fact, as Jacob was saying, is that they don't play not to lose. They don't really care where they are. If they're playing one of the big four away, they'll still go and try and win the game, which is sometimes, as a supporter and you're paying your money, that's all you want. You don't really... maybe I'm just a little easier going than most other Southend fans, but when I'm watching Southend and they go for it, I don't mind if they lose. That's what I want to see. I'd imagine Everton fans are of a similar mind.
There's a great farsightedness about Martinez in that he said, you know, when you become a manager, you should think of yourself as being at that club forever. And in terms of raising the money for this Lukaku deal, they made profits in their last couple of transfer windows, and instead of splurging it, just let it stockpile, and then go and blow. Yeah,
I saw this comment where he said, you know, previously they've gone out and done a little bit here and there. He basically saved up. Yeah,
like a squirrel. You know, he was just squirreling it away in his little Martinez tree.
Right. You know? Spurs. It's kind of difficult to talk about Spurs at the moment because they are such confirmed late season or late transfer addicts, Daniel Levy and co.
Yeah, he really likes a bit of brinkmanship when it comes to negotiating. But this time they have a proper manager, whereas last season they did not know what they were doing, either under Villas Boas or Sherwood.
Right.
And Pochettino is not necessarily the real deal, but he is someone who will get them playing properly in a proper system, who knows what he wants, and you see the effect he had on Southampton. I think Spurs will be much better this season.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like Southampton, but even better.
Well, he took such little time to have an impact on Southampton, changed the way they play in that fabled pressing style that, it worked straight away, and they took it to big teams often, had some great results against Chelsea, against City, against Liverpool, won at Liverpool last season, developed players, and Lallana got better under him, so did other, Rodriguez got better under him. So, you know, Spurs have it's a lopsided squad in certain places, but I think that, you know, there's a lot of talent there, and if he could get Lamella and Eriksen playing together, then they'll be better.
Boom.
You go, James.
I think that's one of the reasons why they probably haven't done much business so far in the transfer window, apart from bringing Vorm, Ben Davies in.
And Dier.
Is that, you know, they made so many signings last year. It was all their first seasons in the Premier League. Apart from Eriksen, few really shone. I think they'll be better for that year and better for stability under Pochettino, because the season before last under AVB, they had their record points total. Even amid all the turmoil of last year, they were still only 3 points short of that. As Jacob was saying, with Pochettino, I think they will be better, and all these players will be better for having a year in England. I expect big things from Lamella this season. I think he will have a big, big year.
So they also in the top four mix?
Yeah, definitely.
Not for me. I think Pochettino's a good manager who deserves this for what he did at Southampton. But that whole game relies upon a real group team ethic. It's group pressing, not individual pressing. One person screws it up and it leaves acres of space behind. And you can sell that to a good, honest team of Southampton players who know that if it doesn't go well, they're going to get relegated back into obscurity.
Who've largely grown up together as well, in football terms.
But we're talking about a disparate band of millionaires who, broadly speaking, all think that they should be somewhere better. And you're going to have to sell that to them. You're going to have to make sure that not one of them slips up. And you're going to have to do that working for a chairman who changes his mind very, very quickly.
Manatuarez, because we hate Spurs on here.
Pochettino's so hard, though, you know, in that sense that he doesn't take much from his players. I think one of the examples you could take from last season at Southampton was when Osvaldo had the run-in with Font. And he was Pochettino's player, but he did that and he was out. And Pochettino wanted nothing more to do with him.
But we're at Tottenham, where Villas-Boas had a similar policy with Adebayor, only to be continually undermined from above, forced to throw him back into the team.
Him back into the team. Sherwood did.
He came back in for the Man City trumping. Right. He came on as a sub and was largely anonymous. And, of course, as soon as Villas-Boas is gone, who's back in the team? Adebayor. So there's always a feeling at Tottenham that it doesn't really matter how much trouble you're in. Just sit around and wait for the next manager.
Mm.
If they behave themselves and let him do what he wants to do, they will be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Potentially, it's a really, really good appointment, and the signings are good. Ben Davies is a really solid signing. Vorm's an excellent goalkeeper. It should, on paper, work. It's just whether or not anyone will give it a chance to work.
Very interesting. As are the prospects for Palace and Newcastle. And hey, why not Stoke as well? Newcastle and their bipolar approach to football are due a good season. Is that right?
I think so. I think,
and you probably like the players they've sold.
Right. I do.
Yeah,
all right. Last season, till January, when they sold Kabay.
Right. Well, they finished 10th. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was all that unpleasantness with Pardew on the touchline, but it did look as though their season ended there when they sold Kabay.
Yeah. That thing with Pardew on the touchline might have made it a good season. It's one they'll never forget.
It's right.
Like, you know.
Okay. A memorable season. Yeah. Right.
Is that their cup? Well, they've made some great signings.
Yeah.
Really good signings.
Tell us about
their
signings.
There's a lot of enthusiasm around. Mm. And there should be. I mean, they have lost Kabay, Debuchy and Remy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they do prove that they've got a good scouting network in place.
Or they watch French TV. One of the two.
Yeah. But they've signed CM De Jong from Ajax, who's a good De Jong as opposed to Luke De Jong.
Oh, okay.
And has been impressive in De Boer's Ajax teams, and Remy Cabella as well, who
Riviere out of Monaco.
Yeah, Riviere's okay, but I think those two players in particular, De Jong and Cabella, have the potential to excite supporters. I also think Yan Mat is a good signing at right back. So yeah, they should be better. I mean, it's with Newcastle, it's all about, I guess, finding the right balance. And sometimes Pardew happens to strike it, and others he doesn't.
The important thing is that the mood has changed. Now Kinnear's gone, the man who apparently could get hold of anyone in the game, but didn't. And now he's gone, and they've made these all of these signings. The mood has changed. The players weren't stupid. They knew what was happening there. The club was openly saying, we're not interested in domestic cups because they reduce your percentage chance of staying in the Premier League. They knew that they were basically just sat in a holding pattern. And who wants to be inspired about being in a holding pattern? Now they've got new players and a bit of impetus. They might, you know, go on and finish eighth and not play really very well in the domestic cups. Who knows? realise I've just compromised my own point here.
No, I think it's nuances. Where would you put Crystal Palace and Stoke in here? Palace, first of all.
Palace haven't strengthened that much, not the way you might think.
Is that a yet, or is that the way it's going to be?
There was a suspicion that having pulled themselves out of the fire last season, they might sort of, you know, throw 30 or 40 million quid of the TV money on and really take a step up. But they've made sort of measured, sensible signings. The key is keeping the intensity. Tony Pulis has never had any problem with the structure or the organisation, but as time went on at Stoke, the fire seemed to dim a little, and that was what had always made them special, particularly against the big teams. Still at the end of last season, they were a terrifying team to play, particularly at Selhurst Park, with those fans right on top of you, with the fact that even against Liverpool, with nothing to play for and 3-0 down with hardly any time left, they still didn't consider that the game was over. So if they can replicate that, then they'll be absolutely fine. No danger of relegation. But I don't think they've made the signings that could really push them chasing for a Europa League place.
Well, I've seen people nominate them as likely to go down. There's some kind of second season syndrome burnout. But
their fans are quite funny because they're sort of really pessimistic, and every time you say, oh, you won't go down, Ed Aaron's big Palace fan downstairs says, you won't go down. He goes, oh, don't say that. We're going down because
especially if you're
you.
Ian McIntosh. Now you've actually tipped Chelsea for the title.
I have, yeah. Now I'm in hiding.
Is it? Are you still on a perfect run, or are cracks beginning to?
No. I was really worried last year because I said quite openly and repeatedly that Liverpool wouldn't win the title, even as the wins stacked up. I said it's not going to happen. They're not going to win the title, and I was getting presents from Liverpool fans. But then that one, yeah, that actually turned out to be right.
Oh right, okay.
I felt bad about that.
You also said that Brazil were going to win the World Cup when they were 5-0 down.
Yeah,
Germany.
That didn't go well.
Yeah.
That went really bad.
Different competition.
Good. It's Stoke, where there are many delights to be had, not least the prospect of seeing Bojan and Peter Crouch lining up side by side.
Yeah, little and large, but Bojan. There's been a lot of...
Or is it Bojan? I get so confused.
Yeah, well, let's...
Bojan. Right. Him.
But, yeah, he really hasn't... realised his potential. You know, when he came through at Barca, same time as Messi and Giovanni Dos Santos, he just hasn't made it. Yeah, he was passed from each club to another on the basis of his reputation. So from Roma, Milan, he went to Ajax, and now he's gone to Stoke. And I think Stoke probably believe they've got a great player. Yeah, wow, we've got this ex-Barca guy from La Masia and all this sort of thing. But I really don't think he's... I think it's not quite Freddie Adu like, but it's I'm not a big Bojan fan.
Is Mark Hughes the man to? And just on a side note, is Johnny Two Saints one of the best translated names in football? Giovanni Dos Santos, Johnny Two Saints.
Yeah.
Is Mark Hughes the man to unlock the Bojan?
There's talent there.
Yeah.
It's just there's been talent there for what, about 5 years.
Right. So
if it's fascinating if he can.
If he can do it in Stoke on a wet Tuesday, we'll all have to reevaluate.
Yeah, it'd be better than Messi, but maybe. I mean, Hughes has kind of done that with a few players in the past. And
Which ones?
You look at Bentley, he got playing properly for a while. And, someone like Benny McCarthy and Rocky Santa Cruz played very well under him.
He got a good season out of Rocky Santa Cruz and got Bentley within a shout of, within an offer of an England place, which
New
he got turned
and everything.
The new Beckham.
Yeah.
That's prodigious, isn't it? And Bentley would be the person, the only person whose career parabola perhaps equates to that of Boyan, or indeed Bojan. That's great. How are they going to end? Kind of where? Sort of middle-ish?
I think of all the teams outside the seven, including Tottenham and Everton, I'd say they're the ones with the strongest chance of eighth. If it all goes according to plan, because they have a certain amount of stability there. They've had their transitional season of switching from Tony Pulis football to Mark Hughes football. It was very, very wobbly towards the winter, though Stoke actually finished with a degree of comfort. There was a period over the winter where it was all looking like it was going to go horribly, horribly wrong. So they're really nice and settled. They don't have too many issues. If they can just settle Stephen Nzonzi down, who was making a few make-away moves towards the end of last season, then I think everything is in place for them to do absolutely fine.
Boom. Couple of off-topic questions for you. Ian, first of all, Jenny Brown asking about General Zod.
My cat, General Zod. Yeah. General Zod is very well, thank you. Killing everything in sight.
Well, how about that? Callum, question for Ian, who sang 99 Problems? I imagine you know, but I don't know why Callum's asking that. Is there a story behind this?
This is because of a James Dart tweet about a rapper throwing a terrible first pitch. And I have essentially,
in a baseball game, is it?
Yes, in a baseball game. And I've essentially turned into my dad in recent years and cannot tell the difference between pop stars, film stars, popular culture.
In response to General Zod, I posted something of Bane Cat at you, and you'd never seen Christopher Nolan Batmans.
No. Really? No, I'm rectifying that now. The wonderful Ted Knutson actually sent me the Batman trilogy on Blu-ray, so I watched the first one. I'm really, really coming on. I think when you have a kid, you just sort of switch off on so many things, and I'm just coming back into popular culture now. In answer to the original question, I don't know.
So really?
Right now, without Google, genuinely. I don't know who sang. So
you're just coming
problems.
Back into popular culture, or getting
becoming aware.
Macintosh.
I wouldn't want to refer to myself as popular culture.
Right. Well, I'm glad I asked that question. James, a couple of questions for you. One, James Roche wants to know if you think the current Leeds regime will be successful.
I actually think Chelino is one of the owners who does know quite a lot about football. Yes, he's quite a controversial character, but I think he's good, but I question his appointment of Hockaday, just for his background, you know, as a first appointment, someone from, you know, Forest Green, that sort of thing. It's just kind of like, this is a little bit crazy. Mm. But some of the signings they're making, or have been trying and failing to make, are quite encouraging. I mean, Viviani, who ended up not going, was highly thought of at Roma, and then Sorensen had played a bit for Juve, but you know it didn't happen. So I mean, he's got the right context to bring in play a little bit like the Pozzos at Watford, although they're much more stable than Chelino. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not too hopeful.
All right, Dave Robinson. Meantime, will Massimo Allegri ruin my world? I'm going to assume Dave Robinson's asking from a Juventus point perspective.
I don't think necessarily.
Okay.
I think he's a better coach than many make out. Some people think he's a bit of a spoofer, but yeah, he was the front runner for the Roma job last year, decided to stay at Milan, front runner for the Italy job this year. That call didn't come, and in the meantime, Juventus did. So obviously people within the game think highly of Max. And yeah, his record...
Who's the most influential player, do you think, in the Juventus dressing room?
Buffon.
Really? More than Pirlo?
Yeah, I mean, Buffon is captain. He's been there longer.
Clearly, Buffon ruins my point, but Pirlo's pretty influential in there.
Yes, and obviously he has a history with Allegri in that in Allegri's first season at Milan, he marginalised Pirlo. And with some justification, because he won the title essentially without him. Pirlo wanted a new contract, 3-year deal. He was turning 30. Milan said, well, we'll give you 1 year. So he left and he went to Juventus. And that was the hinge on which the balance of power swung. You know, Juventus have won every league title since then. But, Allegri's had that thrown in his face now ever since. And he'll probably relish the chance to put it right.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Hey, speaking of all things continental, of course, Tuesday night saw the Super Cup being played down in Cardiff. Super Cup and a super lineup as well from Real Madrid taking on poor old Sevilla, who've gone and won the Europa League for their sins and ended up facing a front six of... Could you name their front six?
Modric, Kroos, Bale, James, Ronaldo, Benzema.
And I saw an estimated value for the starting 11 of 450-something million. Is it euros or pounds? It must be euros.
Then you'd want a few more goals, wouldn't you, for that?
Well, maybe they'll get them. It's only
rubbish last night.
Were they?
No, it was all right. No, they were good. Okay. Kroos was settled in very nicely indeed.
Right. Do you want to hear a crazy stat about Kroos?
Yes.
This is from Infostrada Sports. In his last 10 official matches, Toni Kroos has won the Bundesliga, the German Cup, the World Cup, and now the Euro Super Cup. 4 trophies in 10 matches. Boom.
Yeah. And retire. Mm. He's won everything.
All right. Good. Super. Well, a world away from all that sort of thing are the teams at the bottom of the Premier League, and they are coming up after this. If Louis van Gaal has a golden willy, who's going to be shiny at the bottom, do you think, this time around? James Horncastle. Here's some of the teams that you might want to consider here. Sunderland, Swansea, Leicester, fresh up from down there. QPR, who we haven't mentioned as yet. West Brom, West Ham, Aston Villa.
We haven't mentioned
Burnley. Actually, there's loads of teams we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, Hull, the place.
Hull, your lot.
The place where I went to school.
Exactly.
Now, I think they've made some good signings.
They're playing QPR.
They are.
On Saturday.
Fantastic. No, I think Snodgrass is a great signing. I think he's one of those, for that end of the Premier League, he's a very, very good player. And Ince remains to be seen, you know, after he flew out to Milan.
Yeah.
Had a bit of a chat with Inter. I think, to be honest, they were the ones who said no, not him.
Really? Well, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was a very decent PR move from their point of view, from both points of view. Did a lot for Ince in terms of
how does it do anything for Inter to be linked to
Well, the new owners show they understand the history of the club.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Okay, but the fact they're playing in the Europa League, that's a disaster, isn't it?
What, Inter?
No, yes. Hull. Inter, yeah, not yet, because they've got a playoff against those Icelanders, the crazy ones who do the leaping salmon,
the goal celebration,
and the toilet and the bicycle
full range. Yeah, so we're hoping they score against Inter.
Yeah, but, and statistically, it's likely.
Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, we were talking about Hull in the Europa League.
Yes, they are through to the playoff round after beating, was it Trentin? And yeah, they've done some good business in the. They've made their Livermore deal permanent, and yeah, so I think Hull did really quite well last year.
Right.
Yeah, so I think
12 million for Shane Long.
Shane Long, yeah. If they get 12 million for Shane Long from, was it Southampton?
Yeah.
Oof.
Million profit for 6 months' work.
That's not bad, is it? Mm. Are they still? Is that Tigers issue? Is that still out there?
It is.
Okay. What about, okay, so we got Hull are not being in trouble. Who else? Is it going to be easy if we just say who is going to be in trouble?
Yes.
All right. Or we could talk about the three teams that have come up. Okay. Leicester, QPR, and, now you see I'm struggling.
Burnley.
Burnley, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you say Burnley. Yeah. Tell us then. They were here not so long ago, was it? 2009. That's 5 years ago.
Yeah. When they were very entertaining, actually.
Under Owen Coyle.
Owen Coyle until he left and Brian Laws took over. And they plummeted.
That's true.
Yep. And I'm not sure what happened to Owen Coyle, actually.
He's probably wearing shorts.
Taken down by Michael Cox, I think.
Right, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Zone or whatever.
Yeah.
Just in case you don't know what Ian's talking about. Ian, what are you talking about?
Owen Coyle was actually asked about Michael Cox and Zonal Markings website and the fact that it had proved that Bolton weren't quite as attractive as people were saying, and he dismissively referred to Coxie as Zonal whatever.
Mm. There you go. Have they done a lot of work? Lukas Jukovic.
Yeah, it's done quite well in the Championship, Jukovic. Bought Matt Taylor from West Ham, who workman-like midfielder who won't cause much problems for, you know, within the camp. And the big thing for them is can Danny Ings make the step up? And all the indications are that he can. He's a very promising player. He's quite
young. Sub-editor's dream, Danny Ings.
Yep. He scored loads for them last season. And if he can continue doing that, then they'll have a really good chance of staying up. And, you know, no one thought they would be... No one put them down for automatic promotion last season. So the temptation is look at them and think, oh, it's Burnley, it's small, they're not going to do anything. I thought the same about Palace last season. So, you know, no one thought Burnley would go up. So, and Sean Dyche has done really well there in the 2 years he's been there. So you know, let's not write them off completely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But all right.
There's a long history of unglamorous teams coming up and being largely taken for granted. Bigger teams just assuming it's an easy 3 points and they rattle up a lot of points. Hull being a case in point under Phil Brown, where I think they had something like 27 points by Christmas and about four months later, 28.
QPR, do they fit in that paradigm? Unglamorous Northern club?
I think QPR will be all right. I think, you know, the unworkable squad, the unworkable situation that Redknapp inherited is pretty much gone. They've got rid of a lot of the more difficult players. They've got a very Harry-like squad, and they've managed to harness what they've got there. They made some interesting signings. I think both Stephen Caulker and Jordan Much, both of whom were relegated last year, but I think they're both very good players. Mm-hmm. I just think there's going to be three worse teams than QPR.
Okay. And what to make of Glenn Hoddle? In general, just as
to make a point. Yeah.
No, but it's interesting to see him take up that position under Harry.
Yeah, it's just if he's allowed to belittle people, then you know it'd be a bit of a problem. But if he's sort of keeping his opinions to himself, then he's a good coach, I think. We've seen before.
All right,
it's a nice shop window. Worked out well for McLaren, whose career was appeared to be on the skids, and he did a few months at QPR, and then got one of the biggest jobs in the Championship in Derby County, and did very well with it. So I would bet quite comfortably that Hoddle will have a proper job by the end of the year.
All right, and there are going to be three worse teams, you think, than QPR. Are Leicester going to be one of them, James?
Well, I mean, Leicester ran away with the Championship last year. They broke the 100 points barrier. I think the teams that have done that have typically stayed up, but I'm not, and they have spent some money. I'd question the amount they spent in, was it Leonardo Alloa from Brighton? That seemed to be quite a inflated transfer for a player who is getting on. Well, not getting on. I think he's 28, is he? But is unproven at the Premier League. Nigel Pearson's a decent manager. I think whether he's decent in the Premier League or not, I don't know.
We don't know, listeners. Yeah. We don't know. That's what's so exciting about seeing them begin their campaign on Saturday against Everton.
I saw them play a handful of games last season. I couldn't claim to be an expert.
Right.
But what marked them out last season was their organisation and their team ethic. That everything looked really, really structured and composed and drilled and trained. And I think when you get a team up like that, if they can retain that spirit, if it's not diluted by too many big money glamorous signings, they usually tend to do all right, you know, sort of 16th place.
So who is it who's going to be going down this season, do you think?
I think... Yeah.
What did you say, Jacob?
I said Villa.
Oh, yeah, Villa.
I think Villa as well. Yeah. I think time may just have run out for Villa. There's two problems there. One is the selection of signings. They brought in Joe Cole, Philip Senderos and Kieran Richardson, who sort of who's who of who's crap. that's a bit unkind. Senderos is a world-class defender for 88 minutes of every game. It's the other two where the problems emerge. Joe Cole, I'm not entirely sure, is as mobile as perhaps he should be to put it diplomatically, and I've never really been that big a fan of Kieran Richardson. But the other problem is you've got Roy Keane sitting there waiting, cracking
smoldering
his knuckles.
Yeah. Is that the dynamic? He's basically there for when time runs out for Lambert.
Well, you see it so many times, don't you? You saw it with Mühlenstein last season. Did I get it right that time?
I believe you did.
Yes. And all the way back
Mühlenstein, is that what you said?
Yeah, that sounded about right. Yeah. With Houllier at Liverpool, with Avram Grant at Chelsea, you put someone in that position. I would be very surprised if by the end of the season Roy Keane isn't the manager of Aston Villa.
Got you. Sunderland, Swansea, West Brom, West Ham, Jacob. So those are the only teams that are left to fill the other two spots for a relegation trip, because you didn't fancy any of the other... Are you saying Hull are going to go down?
I didn't say Hull are going to go down.
Well, so who do you think's going down?
We had to do our prediction. I said Villa, West Brom, and just, I'm contradicting myself by saying Burnley.
But you're right.
I might change my mind. I might ask them to change it.
But, yeah.
You know, you have to pick three. Don't be offended, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying Villa, and I think everyone's really big on Villa going down, and then...
Well, I said West Brom.
Yeah. What's the thinking there?
Not convinced by the manager there, or indeed much of what's gone on in the last year or so. It's been very incoherent at West Brom. I think they've got quite a fairly decent squad, but you know, last season was complete shambles. They're lucky not to go down.
What about Swansea?
If they keep Boney, imagine they'd be okay. They've lost Michy, but you know he didn't contribute anything last season. Mm. So Boney's a good striker. Will score goals.
Well, they've healed the wrists. Gary, do you think?
I saw their last game that under Laudrup, and they were awful, really bad. It got really bad under him. Gary Monk came in and got them playing as a team again. And you know, I think people will underestimate him a little bit, but he did all right last season.
Yeah,
no more Chico time.
No more Chico time.
Yeah.
Why, where's he gone to?
I think he followed Laudrup to some place in the Gulf, I don't know.
Boy, if only I'd done some research on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm speculating there, but right. I think there's no more Chico time.
Chico, if you're listening, Allardyce do get in touch, because sincerely, we're a little bit disappointed to find that we're not going to be seeing him. Never mind, eh? Gary Monk continuing to wear his gilet. Someone's got to.
Yeah, now that Tim's gone.
What do we think about... Well, that's it. Sunderland's the only other team we haven't...
About the Hammers?
Oh, yeah, the Hammers!
And Sunderland.
Well, let's do Sunderland then Hammers, because that brings us on to something else.
Right, okay.
Yeah, Sunderland. So Sunderland, very quickly.
Sunderland.
No big signings yet.
Jack Broadwell.
Oh,
yeah, Jack Broadwell's a very interesting signing.
Well, Jimbo's right.
if he's fit... Good player.
All right.
It is going to be one of those things where he does his cruciate ligament in October. Everyone's going to go, of course he has.
What about Jose Altidore? Will the World Cup have returned him?
I love Jose Altidore.
Yeah.
Every time I see him play for the States, he looks perfect for the Premier League. Every time he's in the Premier League, you wonder why he's not back in the States.
Scored lots of goals, obviously, in the Eredivisie. Graziano Pelle, who's gone to Southampton, which...
I haven't seen anything about Southampton either.
We haven't seen. Yeah, we haven't.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Southampton.
Yeah. It's
been a fun summer. Something.
I think they'll be all right.
Yeah.
I think they'll be okay. They've sold a lot of players, but they've got a lot of money. They've brought in two very interesting ones in Pelle and...
Do they have a starting 11?
That's it.
Isn't Pelle regarded as a bit of a joke in Italy?
Well, he was. Yeah. Go on, James.
Yeah, he went to RZ and then he came back, spent some time with Parma, and he didn't do anything, really.
But even when he went back to Holland, everyone made fun of them for signing him, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He can seem to do it in the Netherlands, but whenever he's gone back to, I mean, he gave a series of interviews before the World Cup saying, look, why aren't I being considered for the Italy squad? You know, I've scored, I think, over 50 goals in 66 games or something like that. I should be in contention for this. And he's just disregarded, not because he plays outside of Italy, which was the case in the past. Anyone who played outside of Italy wouldn't necessarily be considered, but I just don't think people are convinced by him. Now, he might prove us wrong, because he's been brought to the club by a coach who knows him in Koeman. But, you know, if you asked anyone in Italy whether Graziano Pelle is an upgrade on Dani Osvaldo, they would probably say no.
Really? And that's what there was, because it's the same in Italian. So not. Jay Rodriguez, is he going to stay?
Well, he's not back for a while, Ooh. Rodriguez, so there's a stronger chance that he would stay than Schneiderlin. Right. But, you know, the chairman came out last week and said that no more, we're not going to sell anymore. But then they said that after the first three had gone, so you can't exactly take them at face value. But
it's a tricky situation for Ronald Koeman, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean,
tweeting pictures of an empty training ground.
It's been a bit odd on Twitter, but certainly entertaining. But they've brought in £90 million for a team that finished eighth last season, and they've still got a fairly good squad and options here and there. And I'm perplexed by £12 million on Shane Long, though.
Mm. Tadic is probably the hipster signing of the summer window.
Oh,
in that he scores 16 goals and assisted 14 in the
midfield.
Yeah. From midfield, so
in the Eredivisie.
Yeah, but
we'll see. West Ham then, Jacob.
How long you got?
Well, last year when we talked about West Ham at this point of the pre-season, you weren't very optimistic.
I can't remember. So long ago.
Yeah. Well, you weren't. And in fact, you stayed... Well, I know that, because whenever we spoke to you at West Ham, you weren't very optimistic. So what do you feel now?
Not very optimistic.
Right.
It's been a shambles this summer. Real shambles. Again, Carroll's out. The results in pre-season have been dreadful up until they beat Sampdoria on Saturday 3-2 at home, but I'm not sure how much you could read into that result. I won't go into the game, but it's not hugely... not huge indications of what you're going to see this season. And they didn't sack Allardyce at the end of the season when they could have done. I'm not sure if I would have done, but they haven't. And now you've got this situation where he's been told to play more attractive football, doesn't particularly want to do that because it's not really his style. And you've got one of the owners constantly undermining him in public. And yeah, so it's all in all, it's not looking great. But you know, you often see teams in pre-season not look great and then surprise you. So I'm not willing to say they're definitely going to be a total disaster, but at the moment it doesn't look particularly good. But then they could go and beat Tottenham. It would be typical if they go and beat Tottenham on Saturday and it all suddenly
they start with Spurs.
Spurs at home. So that would be four in a row against Tottenham. It'll get really ugly if they lose that game though. Upton Park.
Already,
the fans have, but it's kind of pathetic in a certain way. You know, anything that the club posts on Twitter or Facebook from their official accounts, you just get people sending back abuse now. So the mood is really poisonous. It's, you know, threatening to really get ugly there. And Allardyce doesn't do himself many favours because his PR is terrible, and he's not a particularly likeable person. You know, from the image that you get off him on the cameras, you know, he does come across as pretty arrogant. You know, who knows what he's like away from all of that. But
I spent a little time with Big Sam. He was actually really pleasant. Yeah, very personal.
But when you people generally don't know him, don't like him.
Yeah, and, no, either from that point of view. Yeah,
you know, that's not a reason to sack a football manager, though. You know, you don't have to be a nice guy to do that job. But at the same time, they lost 20 games last season. He's very fond of his statistics, but he won't always tell you that. They scored... The most damning thing is that they scored three equalisers all season.
Oof.
Three. When they went one goal down, they pretty much lost.
Right. That could just be because they always took the lead in games, but no, going to say...
Well, they actually dropped the most points from winning positions as well.
Oh,
in the
right,
league.
That's not good.
Yeah, so three equalisers all season, picked up 4 points from losing positions.
Doesn't sound good for West End, does it?
A team that was playing not to lose, losing 20 times, is not a great...
Right. Well, on the subject of Big Sam, an awful lot of people asking about who we think the first manager to be sacked will be.
Paul Lambert.
Really? Ahead of Sam?
Maybe.
Yeah, they're both in there, aren't they? James, anyone else?
Yeah, I think maybe Alan Irvine.
Right. Okay.
Maybe.
Dave Hockaday.
Okay. Yeah, well, if we're going wider, yeah.
All good options. In terms of the title winner, we've said that. Three teams relegated, we've pretty much done that. Champions League places? Do you want to just venture, essay a quartet for that?
City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool.
Agree with that?
Yeah, just for now, until Man United buy more.
Put United ahead of Liverpool.
Right, okay. Best signing of the summer?
Herrera for Manchester United. They needed someone in that position for so long.
Mangala's a big one, I think, for City.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fabregas for Chelsea.
Right, that's interesting. Who do you think is going to be the surprise player of the season? Asked Anthony Wilson a la Michu 2 seasons ago, or perhaps Ramsey last time around.
Maybe CM Dion,
do you think?
Or Cabella, one of those two.
Really?
You see
Cabella really striking it hot at Newcastle?
Yeah, I think he could. Yeah, he's one of those players who dazzles, scored a lot of goals in a poor Montpellier team, and you know, can play that final ball, which, you know, I think they'll need to. So I think they've done that. They've had a great window.
All right, and by contrast, or the opposite question, Ben Walker says, World Cup signings, who will be the league's next El Hadji Diouf? Is there one out there?
Could be Valencia.
Yeah, I was surprised by Valencia because though he scored goals, I didn't think he was actually that good. But now I've said that, he'll go on and put 15 away.
Two were against Honduras. Mm. So, you know, it's hard to know how much to read into three goals at the World Cup when two of them are against the weakest team.
Okay.
It's got to be Alexis Sanchez, hasn't it?
Let's hope not, James.
Absolutely.
Let's hope not, from football's point of view. Well, there you go. The Arsenal kick-off against Palace. That'll be an interesting game on Saturday. And then you can see all the fixtures, of course, at your website of choice. Don't need to sit here reading them out. We will be back, though, on Monday to review all of that action and look forward to anything that's happening midweek. I don't think what that might be. The
Champions League playoffs.
No way. Yeah. And the Europa League playoffs are there as well?
I assume so, yeah.
All right.
It's next week, isn't it?
Wow. It's all beginning again.
Oof.
It's all beginning all over again.
Winter is coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, thank you so much for stepping by.
Thank you.
Because it's been great and illuminating in a very, very real sense. Ian, look forward to seeing you soon, Jacob and James, and you, listener. As we say, Monday we're back. So have a super weekend. Enjoy the return of the Premier League. And we'll see you Monday.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.